Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on that zero emission future that we all hope for. And every week I am joined by the wonderful members of the EV Cafe team, and I have one such today in John Curtis. Fabulous. Welcome, John.
Hello, darlings. How is everybody? All well?
Very good. Thank you.
Good.
So on this day of recording, it's Friday afternoon, and the end of the week beckons. It's all good news. But we get to do one last exciting thing before we enter the weekend, and we get to talk to one of the wonderful pioneers, collaborators and innovators in our industry. And today we've got Shariq Abdulhai. I want to say hi, Shariq.
The jokes don't get any better. That's the trouble.
Oh, gosh. Shariq, I apologize for that introduction. Welcome.
No, you can actually probably use my middle name. Then you don't have to say hi separately. So I think you did it there.
Great. We'll go with that. Well, Shariq, listen, it's a real pleasure to have you on the podcast. You, I believe, are one of the brains behind the London EV Show. We first stumbled across each other in the run-up to your first ever show back. It ended up in the Angel Islington Design Centre in North London, which was a fantastic event. And I want to just for a start off, just understand how did that all come about, and why London, and why now?
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, John, for having me. Yes, it was 2021. It was the COVID time. I've been in the industry for about 18 years now, running various business-to-business events in various different industries, in various different countries. I think it was just before COVID when the EV industry was really catching the momentum, and it was one of these. If you talk to anyone in the events industry, you know, they will tell you that we always kind of keep looking at new ideas and to see, you know, is there any area left really which we can, you know, put an event together on in terms of the topic, etc. But because there are literally tens of events going on in each industry. So again, it was the general exercise, and I ended up at one of the General Motors shows at Excel, probably a year before. And but by that time, it had already kind of come to my mind that there potentially is a gap here. There are all these different auto shows going around, but there isn't one dedicated to the EV industry. Probably one of the reasons was that, you know, it's a new industry. It's starting up. No one really knows if there's enough mileage in terms of putting together a huge trade show. I mean, you can always have smaller events, conferences, seminars. And so the London EV show, really, it was a bit of a no-brainer. You know, I thought London being a global city, if that is the vision, if the vision is to really unite the global EV industry, not just from the UK, then I think London is the place to do it. So to launch it, we did it at the Business Design Centre, BDC, in Angel. And we were looking for potential partners, you guys at EV Cafe, I was really, you know, I think I said to you in our first conversation that I just love the synergy and energy you guys have with yourself, John, Sarah, Sam, Johnny. Sam was actually one of the first speakers I personally approached on LinkedIn.
Oh, sorry about that.
See if he can be part of this. But it just turned out to be wonderful. So I think that's how it started. But you never know, you know, how this is going to shape up in the end.
I was about to say that it was brave, because there weren't really EV specific shows like this, yet you said, I'm going to give this a try. Is that part of your nature to be quite brave in your decisions and say, well, I'm going to find this new area and it may work, it may not. If it doesn't, I'll learn from it and develop. If it does work, happy days, we get bigger as you have and become a real flagship for the industry.
Absolutely, John. I think in our industry, in the events industry, I think, you know, most entrepreneurs, especially the smaller ones like me, I think we just have to go with your intuition most of the time. And you just pick up an idea and you if it gets traction, you know, but there have been cases which is very normal. Again, you know, you come up with an idea, you think this is brilliant. You know, all the ingredients are there. The industry is booming. You know, sometimes you even think you're the first one to put something together, but it just doesn't work as well as you would have thought. So it was exactly the same idea. We thought, you know, we'll give it a go. But if you ask me, I think we can have another conversation someday. There have been a number of times when I thought, okay, this is something which would work and we'd go after it, and then it just turns out. But I think that's the nature of, you know, if you're a business person, especially a small business owner, I think, you know, you got to try different things.
But that, I think that's the incredible thing here, Shariq, that you know, you consider yourself a smaller entrepreneur or a smaller business, but here you are putting on a global show. So this isn't, you haven't gone small, you haven't allowed your sense of being a small business, or, you know, it's, you know, some big entrepreneurs, but you've sort of put your big entrepreneur shoes on, haven't you, and just kind of gone, hey, here I am on the globe. What gave you that confidence, that vision to go global with this? Because I know we'll see in the upcoming show, we'll see people from all over the world.
Well, I think, again, it kind of goes back. So just a bit of background, you know, I started my journey into the events industry back in 2005. I started with a company in London, which is a global company, but we used to do very small events. So we would put together training courses for 10, 12, 15 people in various industries. I think I got a really good chance. I spent about 3.5 years there. But because it was, again, a bit of an entrepreneurial setup, you know, we were led to do things the way we were just given projects and tasks and say, you know, go and make it work. So I think that's where I thought, okay, if it's working here, maybe, you know, there's an opportunity. I left that job. There was an Irish company. I think that was really a good experience. They were setting up their training division in St. James's in London. And they asked me if things hadn't been working out as well as they would have probably planned. So they asked me if, you know, I can help out. I spent about 18 months there. So we put together smaller training courses and it kind of worked. I think that's when I thought, you know, it's probably a time to give it a go. I was renting a very small box kind of room in London, as most people will do there at that time. I remember in 2010, registering the company name Valiant and thinking, you know, we start. And again, I think it's those initial kind of hurdles. I remember putting the first ever training course together as, you know, Valiant. And when we started, when I say we, it was basically me, you know, running around everything. But we always like to say we as a company. So I remember reaching out to clients, and the first ever client was a senior executive from Sweden who signed up to do to come along to the training course. And I clearly remember, I think she approached the trainer as well. And I had a trainer by the name Neil Chapman, a great guy in the industry. So we were doing the communications training. And the client had approached Neil as well, just to double check if, you know, this is all genuine, and because they've never heard of Valiant as a company. So I remember Neil sharing that message to me. He said, you know, I gave her a thumbs up. So here is the first client. So when you see that, I just simply thought, if this is the first client, if this registration form came in, that really means, you know, we could do a lot more than this. So first few years, we it was, again, smaller training courses in London. We took them overseas to Houston, to Australia, to Turkey, to India. But again, it was a small setup in terms of the scale of events. The next step came was to do a bit of a conference. We thought, you know, we can now move on to the next step rather than having 10, 15, 20 people. You know, maybe we expand. So we did a couple of energy communication conferences, one in Houston and one in London. We ended up with like 70, 80 people. And I think that was the next step. And then I think it was around 2015 that I thought, you know, exhibition seems interesting. Now you can probably add that element to it. So we thought, you know, that's the next stage. But the difference, I think only difference is a lot of the times people in exhibitions industry, they come from an exhibitions background. But when I talk to people even now, you know, they probably think, you know, I worked with the bigger organizers, and that's where I got the idea from. But I think it was more about, you know, going out and about checking out different events, and then, as you said, really giving it a go. And a lot of things work, some things don't. But I think, you know, if you persist and you kind of carry on your journey, you know, I think, you know, things do work in the end.
And I think that characterizes exactly what I saw in you guys, that the giving it a go sort of says, well, it's not really very, you know, it's just, oh, we'll give it a go. But actually what you did at the Angel Business Design Center, or BDC, was do something of huge risk, right? A huge risk, because you were so unfortunate in that the rules slightly changed just a couple of days. But you still persisted. What is it about you, Shariq, that has that persistence? How did you come by that persistence, that determination, and that willingness to press through difficult situations? There must have been times in your life where you've learned this early on. Talk to us about that.
Well, I think I've almost never talked about, you know, the personal side of things as well. But I was born in Kashmir, which is a place to the northern sides of India. It's an area between India and Pakistan. And in the early days as well, you know, I obviously come from a very middle-class background. And I think I saw my dad really persist with things. And it was mostly, you know, he's a businessman as well. And I think to me, he is the greatest entrepreneur, purely because I think I saw when it, you know, came to risk element of things, when it came to, you know, doing things where you would think, you know, this is not possible. So he would, and he didn't need to tell me. So it was me, my sister, and so he, you could almost always see it, you know, then he, you know, he's going really on and about his job and doing things. So I think maybe, you know, from that upbringing, you kind of think, okay, you see, you know, a bit of a hustle going on, and you see things work. But I think it, you know, I got kids myself now, so I think it's a good way. Although they see me as a bit of a Dell boy, to be honest with you, because this, and I was thinking this year, Paul, I was thinking if we can get him to come to the London EV show. He's, you know, obviously elderly now, but I thought about it. I thought, because there are stories in the household where, you know, arranging last minute things at times, and really a bit of a Del Boy style. So, but I think, but then again, it's, I think, you know, things by looking around, and sometimes it's the circumstance as well, you know, you just don't have too many options, and you just have to go for what you need to do.
Shariq, I'm fascinated to understand what you like about the industry. You describe yourself as a bit of a Del Boy character. Is it doing the deal? Is it finding the idea? Is it having a team of people that you can motivate and inspire? Is it the sales process? What is it specifically about this area of events that makes you excited and gets you out of bed in the morning?
With the event, Sean, I think, you know, again, if you talk to, you know, people who have spent maybe 15, 20, 25 years in the industry, it is one of those industries that, you know, you love at times, but it's that, you know, it's so just a couple of days before the event, you just think, you know, why are you in this industry or why are you doing it? But then just when that ribbon is cut, you know, the event is, you know, going on, and at the end of the event, you can't wait for the next one. So I think you kind of get stuck in this industry, but you just, it's difficult to leave it at times. But I think the key thing here is you can actually see the result. So I don't think there are a lot of other industries where you're putting in, you know, you're making plans, but you see things happening. So for example, now even with the EV show, you know, we've been considering for a while now, can we take it elsewhere? Because now it's, you know, a bit established, all these clients, you know, with partners like yourselves, I think we discussed it previously as well, can we go to some other geographies and would have business in other parts of the world? And then right from the moment you pencil in that idea, you start working with it, you know, things start happening. I think it's, and second, I think the most important thing is it is really people's business. You know, there is literally no product up until the event, you know, starts happening. And you're just dealing with ideas, you're dealing with concepts. But I think two things. One, it is about people at the end of the day. There isn't really a product, as you know, you can't touch and feel anything before that, you know, door is open for the show. And second, I think it's that sense of, you know, you work on stuff and you see it happen. And, you know, that just, at any event, really before even that event, even on those 3 days, there are so many ideas come, you know, the number of ideas come to you. I think this can be a second, I guess, is when you travel around a bit, you know, I can now literally, I think it happens to people in every industry. So I look at things from kind of an events point of view. So even if I'm looking at an aeroplane, I think, you know, what type of events are going on in the aviation industry? Can there be one for this? Whatever you look at. So when we talk to my daughters at times, you know, anything, I was thinking, you know, can we do an event to do with stationery for schools and kids? So, you know, it's a bit of, I think you kind of, you know, you put those glasses on and you start. But the excitement is really, I think it's from the initial stages, and within a period of 10, 12 months, you can actually see that idea, you know, from a vague idea to actually see it happen. And I think one of the things which kind of struck me over the last couple of years, when I am in that physical event on the day, you kind of get that sense that because of that idea, you see all these people together. And you look around, you see, okay, so this was the idea. Even when you say London EV show, you know, you kind of think, okay, so this was the brand idea you had. The people are talking about it as an entity now. So I think this is one of the bit of a unique things in the industry. And this is one of the reasons probably you get stuck with it. It's hard to leave it.
we say it similarly about the, I mean, John's not so much in the automotive, although you've been around the automotive sector for many years, but I checked into the automotive industry on the Edgware Road in 1990, cleaning cars, and as the saying goes, you can check out but you can never leave, but I'm still here in one form or another. It's very, very similar. I think there's a lot of synergy or similarities between those two things. I mean, Shariq, life seems good, the show's successful, you've made incredible progress, got a lovely family, it sounds like some a really positive start. I mean, you know, I know that Kashmir has been sort of aligned to some troublesome times, some real difficult times. Can you speak to a time where, you know, life for you got really tough? I'm kind of really aware that there's this resilience, this optimism in you. But what was it that, you know, what was that situation that you kind of really made you dig deep and has given you that foundation for this lovely optimism that we see before us today?
I think Well, again, since let's say if we go back to 2010, you know, before that, it was mostly, you know, you were in a full-time job and you kind of expected, you know, what's happening at the end of the month with paychecks and other things. And again, you know, I was on my own, you know, no particular responsibilities. I got married in 2012. And so then, but I think I took the step about 6 months before that. So I thought it's either now, it's probably difficult to then, you know, see what happens after that. And I remember again in London to kind of, you know, I made a few calculations that, okay, this is the minimum amount I need to kind of get going in those initial months, even if we start the business, you know, nothing sort of happens, which is not uncommon with startups. So I did a few calculations. I thought, okay, this means if I have a couple of days a week job, even if it's an odd job over the weekend, so I kind of stuck with that and just to, you know, kind of de-risk a little bit. When the journey over the years, it got tough at times, you know, I must say that, especially COVID, we all know, you know, COVID was an extremely difficult time, especially for our industry. But I think right from 2010, because, you know, especially when your eyes are always on that growth trajectory, you know, you're not kind of satisfied what you're doing. You're always kind of looking a step ahead. Finance is always a very, very important factor. And when you plan things, I remember, I think it was roughly around 2012, 13 or 14, things got really, really hard. And one of the reasons was we ventured into an overseas event in Africa and one of the governments was sponsoring it. And very last minute, I think about a week prior to the event, they pulled out. And this was now, you know, I remember I was in Turkey. We were on holiday. I think kids were off from school. And I got the message that, you know, they don't want to go ahead. And without any legitimate reason, but obviously we had no experience dealing with such things. Now, my mind was doing calculations. What do we do? How can we return that money to clients? And what can be done? A week, 10 days. And it was a bit of a large-scale planned event. I think that was, you know, one of the times where it kind of went flat. And when they say there's a fine dividing line between, you know, success and failure, I think that, and you know, Paul, you know, John, you know, when you're in industry like ours, you know, you're not doing business behind the doors. So you are out there and its reputation is literally everything. And if once word goes out, you know, you did something wrong, even if it was not your doing, it's very difficult to kind of, you know, come out there again and try to convince the same clients to do business with you again. That probably was the toughest period. And I genuinely remember, you know, it was not even for days. You didn't know where to pay the, you know, I had a few employees by then and it was a bit of a difficult time. So I think, again, what you would do is, you know, because you have to do something about it. You can't just not do anything. I clearly remember, there's a bit of a funny incident here. I convinced one of my very good friends from university time. He's doing really well. And I said to him, look, it's a big opportunity now. And we're going overseas. We're doing this stuff. And there is a big vision here. And he got convinced. He said, okay, I'll help you out a couple of hours a week or to look into your accounts and to make sure you're doing the financial things right. I remember, Paul, John, I took him to our accountants the very first meeting. Now, when we're driving there, I'm just pitching him, this is the big stuff. And it kind of takes me back to Del Boy when each time he tells Rod, next time this year, we will be millionaires. And this was kind of the pitch. And we went, and it's me, the accountant, and him. And the first thing the accountant tells me is, I think it's best to go for bankruptcy because then you'll stay on your tax. And I'm just looking at him and I'm just saying, you know, this was not planned and I'll explain to you later. But I said to the accountant, you know, that's not an option. It doesn't matter what happens, you know, the company has to carry on. And I think, you know, it's been last 12, 13 years since we launched Valiant. It survived, you know, your ups and downs, and the most recent one being COVID. Very difficult, but again, you know, you just need to keep going. And I think you find people who can support you in one way or the other. And I think friends, family play an important role, and people in your network, you know, who kind of still believe in you. But I do think, you know, we've come a long way since then. And you also get some lessons to see when you plan for that further growth. You kind of always think, you know, how much risk can you take? So, you know, because, you know, you just have to kind of always be a bit, you know, but one thing with me is I'm not good with numbers, etc. I honestly even now don't know much about, you know, the what's going on with the financial side of things. But I think it's good to have people who know better than you other areas. My job really, Paul, is, you know, trying some new ideas, you know, seeing if, you know, what can we give it a go or no. But I think you would, it's not just me. I'm not a unique kind of story here. But if you talk to any entrepreneur, you know, who has started, who has bootstrapped his stuff and not had any major backing here and there. But now things are, for the last couple of years, we've been approached by a number of, you know, kind of private equity base. My problem always is a bit, I don't know if I can, you know, work within that structure. You know, there was a recent meeting I had, and very keen to kind of acquire some of the things that we do, but that probably would meant going back into that corporate structure. But things are happening now, and I can see probably we need to change the direction a bit, but then, you know, I don't know if how much will I be required to what we're doing now. We're doing things as any, you know, any entrepreneur who is doing things his way, really.
And Shariq, it seems Valiant by name and Valiant by nature. Is that why the name came out? Just that sort of sense of being valiant and sort of taking on the world?
Did you know what our first name was? It wasn't even Valiant. But then I thought, no, this has got a bit of a negative connotation to it. I think I had registered it as Brazen Limited.
Love that.
I think if you go to Companies House, you can still, you know, our first name for a few days was Brazen Business Media. And I thought, because you were, you know, you were out there to take on a few of the big boys, and you didn't know how this is going to pan out. And as every industry, you know, there are some major players, you know, some like the stuff you do, but others won't. So, but then I checked it up again in dictionary, and I thought, no, I think this is, you know, people might think that out there to, you know, to kind of do this. So I thought, what is the nearest possible word which is a bit positive as well? I thought, but Valiant, I think, is much better.
Yeah.
And
we love
you know, it. Whether it's Brazen or Valiant, you have moved from being Del Boy, as you perhaps felt when you set out, to quite a mover and a shaker. And just looking at the people who are coming to the London EV show, you've got a Minister of State for the Department of Transport, a Deputy Minister for Climate Change from the Welsh Government. You've got a Minister of Transport from Norway. You've got heads of not only our industry, but government who are saying, we've got to be at the London EV show. You must be massively proud of this.
Absolutely, John. I think, you know, again, but you have to give it to the teams who work, you know, day in and out. You know, there's no doubt about that. Obviously, I get to talk about this, but, you know, they have put in a lot of effort. But yes, I think you, when you look at, and things, you know, I think things have to happen, because if you keep doing what you're trying to do and then you don't get the results, then again, you kind of always, I think you question more about, you know, what you do. But I think two incidents, because, Paul, you mentioned a couple of things. I tell you, there are a number of things, but I think when chips were down, once I remember going abroad, again, for one of the events, and only booking one-way ticket, because we genuinely did not have money for the return. So, but I had, again, because when you have people around, I was fairly confident if any invoices were clear by the time I had to come back, I can text someone and say, you know, can you book this ticket for me? And then we'll sort it out. So that was one. But I think the lowest point was and this is the first time I'm talking about this because, well, I don't know whether you put me in a bit of a spot here or whether this is going to turn out good, but I'm happy to share. I think once in our London office, we couldn't pay rent for about, I think, 2-3 months. And you know, the building manager was very, very kind because usually, you know, they won't let you carry on if you don't pay it even for a couple of days. But I think it had been about 2-3 months. And the email I got was, I think that kind of shook me a bit because I think that was when I thought, okay, I'm making all these decisions. There is a vision. But then you kind of feel you have responsibility for others within the company. So I'm not saying you got to slow down, but I think you got to take people along with you, you know, in terms of some of the decisions that you make. I think the email was like, you know, because it's really overdue now, and if you don't clear it by, gave us a couple of days, the coffee machines, which was the common area, won't be accessible to your staff. Now, this was probably from, you know, from professional point of view, this was probably the lowest because I couldn't share this with the staff, but then I couldn't think of a situation where someone from the office is popping out and being told you can't have the coffee from the common area because you haven't cleared the bill. So I think, but again, you know, I think we cleared the bill the same day. I don't know, I had to dig out, you know, who I called at that time, picked up the phone and we sorted it out. But I think these are the things. So one of the things I try to do now is go back to see every single person, whether someone has worked with Valiant for a day or, you know, for a month. I think they've had a role to play in this. So sometimes what I try to do now is, and thankfully, you know, we have been able to retain a lot of the people who have been part of the journey. But I think it does give you a satisfaction. It's not, I think there are multiple factors then, you know, when you kind of walk back those memories, you look at things, it just probably humbles you a bit more and you start feeling more grateful. But again, things at times can go, you know, as they say, very fine dividing line. So But faith, I must say, is, you know, it has played a bit an important factor because I think the belief system is really whatever is to happen will happen. And you, as long as you, you know, you're trying your best to stick to certain ethics or things, you know, like that. And your intention really is not to not do good in terms of whether it's your clients or whether whoever you're dealing with. I think at times, you know, you kind of carry on with that journey. So there are a couple of, when you look back, I don't, you know, share this with people a lot because sometimes if you, even when I'm talking about it now, but I must say things are different now. So I don't want any potential investors to listen to this and say, this is not the right place.
No. But do you know what, Ashariq? If they're investors worth their salt, they've been on this journey themselves. They've been in an office and not been able to pay the bill. They've failed in a business because honestly, if you've not failed, you've not lived. You've not gone to the edge. And it's, I think there's a great saying. I can't remember who said it, but it's something. It's like, you know, somebody like Henry Ford or somebody. It's only those that risk going too far will ever know how far you can go, you know? And we've got to risk. We've got to take that risk. And you've done it. And do you know what is delightful, genuinely, I use that word very specifically, delightful to hear this from you and to hear your journey and to really put flesh on the London EV show, you know, because it's been a journey. You know, year one, year two, and now year three. And it's just so refreshing to hear your heart and your passion, your belief that, you know, you've got to do the right thing, you want to do something good, and you want to deliver something of value to the people that, one, are exhibiting, because they're really important, but also to the people that are going to attend, which is another fantastic thing.
I've got a thing, Paul. I it's just dawned on me. I've known Ashariq for 2-3 years now, and it's always been a business relationship. And what I've discovered is that you're a friend I didn't know I had. You're somebody that, because we don't get the opportunity to find out about the people when we're doing business sometimes. You know, we have very focused conversations about specific things. We jump on calls with other people. And this opportunity to share a bit of the background, a bit of your vision, a bit of how you see the future developing is so interesting, because it makes me think, see you in a different light. And see you as somebody who's just like Paul, just like me. We're doing our very, very best to give something back to the industry that we serve. You're quite a man.
Thank you. No, I think, John, again, it honestly, this is probably the first time, you know, I'm having a conversation like this. Usually, again, as you said, it's all about business. It's all about... But you kind of relate, you know, when you look at certain people in life, certain structures, certain businesses, you know, when they say, if you see someone who has made it big, ultimately, that's why, you know, one of the things I now think, you never judge people, or you don't think, you know, this would have come to him, or he had some kind of a golden spoon in his mouth, stuff like that. Because I think you don't know the struggle at times that people have gone through. Or people, and again, it's your own choice. It's not, we're not saying that, but I think ultimately, I think from an events, maybe someone who is listening into or listening to this from an events point of view, one other incident. Sorry, Paul, it came to me once, one of the shows. I won't say which show now, but because, you know, for some reason, but I'll tell you, I think it was day two, and one of the bills was for the AV guys. And I got the message, Duke, we need the money before 10. And you knew, why is it before 10? Because 10 was the start of the day, and you knew probably the screens won't be on if it doesn't happen. So, you know, as a startup, when you don't have that, the funding, et cetera, and there are certain situations, but I think faith, again, plays an important part here, because you kind of believe that there is someone in control of, you know, of things, and which is beyond us. So I think, and you, so the belief in God is really helped me, I must say, because especially when you went through certain things in life, you kind of, but these are good things ultimately, because, you know, let's say now going forward, yes, you know, we're now moving into a different direction. Maybe, you know, there are investments available, there are other opportunities, but because you've come through this, I think this will always maybe, so that's why when I go back, if someone asks me, would you have it the other way? So maybe you had, let's say you had the funding available from day one, or things would have been really smooth from day one, but I probably think it's best to go through some challenging times. So as you said, you kind of always think that, you know, if you've gone through it this time, the resilience is, we can't pick it from, you know, books or from management schools. I went to one, I did my master's in marketing. Yes, you know, you kind of learn a lot of stuff there. But I think resilience is all about if I can move this glass this time, you know, 10 centimeters, next time I could do 15 and then 20, 25. But if I try to do it first time, I might fail. So I think it definitely, and that's why, again, with you guys, you know, when we had the first conversation, I think you've come a long way since as well. But you kind of feel, you know, you see what you are trying to do, you can relate to a number of things. And I think, you know, absolutely, you just got to wake up and keep going.
It's all about collaboration, isn't it? I think one of the things that we do really well is we work together. So I think we come as the EV Cafe Village, and we come together. We have a small group of sponsors, partners that come with us. We then become part of a bigger community of the London EV show. And we all kind of work as a system. There's software, there's hardware, there's technology, there's people-led businesses, there's training, there's techniques. There's all kinds of stuff at the event. But we're all pulling in the same direction, trying to help make a better tomorrow. There's that real sense that we've got a shared mission, a shared way of working, and that we actually all want each other to succeed.
Absolutely. And I think it kind of always is that added motivation. So, you know, from an events point of view, we do events in other industries as well. Yes, you know, these events connect people, help people achieve more things, more business. But then, for example, the sustainability events, because it's got that added kind of advantage, you know, if these events play that part in that respect. So I think it's always an added kind of factor and added motivation. I've been asked this question a few times, you know, sustainability. And I'm always very clear, you know, I run London EV Show as a business because I have to. You know, I can't think of it as, you know, especially at this scale. But I think there is genuinely, if you're doing something and it has that added advantage. So, for example, helping towards sustainability. I mean, we could be doing another normal or, you know, kind of standard car show where you have all different cars there. Yes, as a business, it will still, you know, your approach would probably be same. But when you meet people on events, we have another one called the London Climate Technology Show, again at Excel. So here we look at decarbonizing the transport sector. At CTS, we look at decarbonizing all different other industries. So we look at energy, the built environment, basically the heavy side of, you know, kind of industries who have a larger carbon footprint. So again, I think one thing I've definitely seen on these events, which are sustainability led or focused, the passion, and there are a lot of people who are not necessarily in this for business. You know, they have really probably made it a mission in their lives that, you know, they want to do something about it. So I think that energy is absolutely there, and you could feel, you know, why there is a buzz around these events. And I think there's a bit of an extra factor here, which we've really been enjoying.
Yeah, I can't wait. I simply can't wait. I'm very excited. I thoroughly enjoyed last year. And I think from a practical perspective, meeting so many good new people in one place was massively important for the EV Cafe. Mm-hmm. I think the audience that we had for our session was incredibly knowledgeable, inquisitive, curious. They wanted to learn more. You put together such a great show, and I would really urge everybody, and I mean this, not just because you're on the call, we've been saying it for weeks, the London EV Show is genuinely one of the highlights of my year, and if you can get along there, you really should.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think if we've learned anything today, it's because we'll meet Del Boy there. No,
real Del Boy one day, Paul. Maybe one day.
His vehicle is in the British Motor Museum in Gaydon. Yeah. So I've got a picture of it. It's right there.
We might just want to convert it into an electric vehicle first.
That's a really good idea. Let's do that. But Shariq, listen, it's been a real pleasure talking with you today. We've got the London EV Show coming up, and if you know, you might be listening to this and thinking, can I go? Well, it's the 28th to the 30th of November. This podcast will be released, I think, oh my gosh, the 22nd, I'm guessing. Yes, the 22nd, which is the Wednesday. So we'll be getting it. So you'll have time. There'll be a registration link in the comments, so just kind of click that link. But, you know, listen, if you've missed it and you're listening to it at some point later in 23 or early in 24, the London EV Show, I'm pretty sure, Shariq, you'll have to give me a nod. Is it going to be there in 2024?
Absolutely, and it's all already confirmed for next year, and we're sticking to the dates last week of November 2024 and bigger than this year.
Wow. Going bigger, going better. I'm sure we hope to be a part of that as well, Shariq. So Shariq, are you going to book us for next year as well? We'll get it on the podcast.
My commitment now to have you there.
Verbal contract. Excellent.
Yeah,
right?
With a free ticket. That's free it. Ticket.
We'll talk about commercials later with Paul, but yeah.
But Shereen, listen, I've been delighted today, and you know, I love the kind of give it a go mentality, but and I don't want us to think that give it a go mentality means it's slapdash, because it really isn't. You know, the show is great, the people, and in particular you, Shereen, we've kind of loved this show because of who you are and because of your passion and determination to get something over the line. And even if it is right at the last minute, you do just get it done. And that is just such a privilege to be around. Mm. So we're very grateful for you today and for sharing some of your life that maybe never many of us have not seen before. And we only hope that we can get to see it again much more in the future. So check out the London EV Show. Check out Shereen Abdulhai on LinkedIn. You can follow him there. Mm-hmm. And basically, this time next year, Rodders, we'll be millionaires.
Millionaires. You plonker.
You.
You know, excellent. So, honestly, as I said, I think this has been one of, you know, again, it's not a standard question answer thing. So I might have to send a copy of this to my dad as well. It's a different one I've done. So I think thank you for having me. And it's a good conversation. I really enjoyed it.
Your dad will be very proud, and so he should be. What a wonderful day, and what a wonderful way to end. Thanks ever so much, everybody. And check out all the other podcasts on the EV Cafe, evcafe.org. I always get this bit wrong. The evcafe.org content. Go there. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you. Take
care. At least two of us are professionals.